everyone, and welcome to another episode of the TakeCast. My name is Davis Matic. You can find me on Twitter at Davis Matic. This episode of the podcast is one of the favorite varieties of TakeCast listeners. I have one of my friends who is way smarter than me come on the show. Keegan Abdu is coming on the podcast this week. He's been on two prior episodes of the show, as well as a couple Patreon editions of the show as well. Keegan works for NFL Next Gen Stats and has published articles come out on NFL.com, sort of revealing some of the trends every week that happen in the NFL and can only be found using the NFL Next Gen Stats. Keegan has a ton of great information about what's happening and what's changing in the NFL. I think that this episode of the show is another great example of how the use of analytics can help us greater understand and predict things happening in the NFL. Of course, if you like the show, you can always leave a rating and review on iTunes. That's very helpful. You can also subscribe to the show on Patreon to get bonus episodes of the show. That's patreon.com/takecast. And of course, we are sponsored by rotoexperts.com. The NFL 365 package gets you 1 year of rotoexperts.com for $39.99, and you can get $10 off using the promo code MATIC, M-A-T-T-E-K. Now let's get into the show. All right, everyone. Very excited to welcome back my buddy Keegan to the show. He is a multiple repeat guest of the show. Have him on to talk about all of the cool stuff that he's doing in the world of football analytics. One of the few guys who's actually grinding on the inside of the game to change the products that we are able to interact with. Keegan, what's changed since the last time we've talked to you?
So I was able to work with UCLA this off season, just doing some general recruiting research and stuff and helping out Ethan Young, who used to be at NextGen, is now the director of player personnel there. So that was a really great experience. But started back up with NextGen in August, and it's been really exciting. One thing that's, I'll go through a few things that are new this year, but one thing that's new, I don't know if you saw this, but last night and going forward for every NFL Network game, we're going to have a live page on NFL.com where you can see the player locations throughout the entire game, including, you know, when one of my favorite things last night was pregame, you could see like all the Panthers running through like a tunnel, their tunnel on the field, which is pretty funny. And Ben Baldwin had a pretty funny thread about the stuff on there. But the cool stuff that you can see in there is on any play in any of those games, you can go to play diagram. You can see how, you know, the dots on the field move throughout the play. It shows like the route, so you can kind of get an idea of the route concept, and you can get separation between any two players. So definitely recommend checking that out during any NFL Network game. Engineering team has been working hard this off season of the stuff that's already been developed. One of my favorite things is we've added hurries to the next gen tracking. So this is something that we, you know, asked for them to work for in the off season, and they delivered in full. Before, we were only measuring pressures at the pass forward. So if a guy was flushed out of the pocket because the defender got close to him, like that wasn't being counted. It was only when the quarterback was
right.
They came up with hurries in the offseason, which is less than 1.5 yards of pass rush separation at any point up to the pass forward. So you can have a hurry and pressure in the same play. If he's less than 1.5 yards, the pressure is definition is 2 yards to avoid some overlap there. So this has given us a more comprehensive picture from a next gen standpoint of a pass rusher's ability, and we've come up with disruptions to kind of combine those. Traditionally it's usually like hits and hurries equals pressure, like a hit or a hurry equals a pressure. The way that we've done it now with just our terminology is a hurry or a pressure on a play gives a player disruption. And then from the opposite side, what we can do, which is really exciting, is it gives us pressures evaded. So if a quarterback was hurried on a play but escaped that hurry and was not pressured by the time he was throwing, so basically, like, you know, think of Russell Wilson, think of Baker Mayfield, who actually led the league in that, evading 20 25% of his pressures last year. So it's a good way to, you know, measure how the quarterback himself is kind of depressing pressure rate compared to his offensive line. A good way to, you know, divide the credit there.
Yeah, so it's more of the work of kind of what we talked about the last time were you on, which was just trying to figure out of the 22 guys on the field, who is responsible for, you know, each percentage of EPA basically, or like, you know, who is creating the difference in success for the offense or success for the defense on every single play. It's just more ways to capture that, you know, basically using player tracking to find more solutions to EPA.
Yeah. And there's been some really great work done recently by like Eric Eager and George Ruri at PFF. And this has been a thing for a long time that, you know, pressure is more of a quarterback stat than an offensive line stat. And, you know, Football Outsiders is hammering that home 10 years ago even. But the study that I did recently, I suggest people check out, and it's really comprehensive. And this is just another way that we can say, you know, Deshaun Watson was the fourth most pressured quarterback last year, but it could have been even worse had it not been for his high pressures evaded rate, you know?
Yeah, so where do you stand on that? Interceptions and sacks and stuff as – really just sacks. Where do you stand on the idea that sacks are a quarterback stat?
I think that it's more of a quarterback stat than offensive line because time to throw is just so correlated with sack and pressure rate. And you really see the increase in pressure rate in the almost the 1.75 second to 2.75 second range, which is interesting.
Right.
From what I've seen. But I do think that the quarterback, like year over year, the guys that are going to be highly pressured because they're holding onto the ball are going to continually be highly pressured. And you can get an offensive line that will help mitigate that. I mean, offensive line definitely plays a huge part in it, but the quarterback in the end is probably the most important factor in deciding pressure rate in my mind.
Yeah. And that, I mean, I guess kind of that makes sense intuitively to me because I heard someone kind of explain it basically that, you know, there are a lot of decisions that a quarterback can make when they are under pressure, and that kind of defines the style of quarterback they are, whether they look for the safe option. Aaron Rodgers looks for the safe option a lot of the time. Yeah. Whether they still look for, you know, the positive play, even in that situation, that would be like the Jameis Winston outcome, where pretty much regardless of what situation he or his receivers find himself in, he's still trying to create positive plays, even though those create a lot of negative outcomes.
Absolutely. And yeah, so that's that whole kind of area of that next gen is worked on in the offseason. They've also created some time in the tackle box. They're not just measuring time to throw, but time in the tackle box. I think that's a good – we haven't really dove into it yet, but I'm definitely interested to see how that kind of affects pressure rates and affects, like, you know, just you can tell, like, Josh Allen probably has a lot less time in the tackle box because he's so willing to scramble all the time, like, and kind of classifying quarterbacks that way I think will be interesting going forward.
I really like that idea. I think we will be able to do a lot of like stylistic comps on quarterbacks that will really just the more information we get on stuff other than yards, touchdowns, turnovers for quarterbacks, the easier it is for us to create buckets of comparisons because quarterback comps are really hard to make. Like wide receiver, running back, tight end comps on offense you can make, but quarterbacks is a lot more difficult.
Yeah, and we have like a whole tendencies dashboard at NextGen that's really cool. We can kind of see, you know, what percentage of the time they throw inside the tackle box, what percentage of the time they're throwing on the run, what areas of the field they're targeting, what positions they're targeting, stuff like that. But so it's kind of cool. A lot of stuff, content that we come up with are like comparisons of style, which I like to do at least.
Yeah. Well. So what are a couple of the big things that are on the horizon for NFL Next Gen?
Before we touch on that, I just want to go one more. Caused by pressure is another one of my favorite things that they've developed in the offseason. So basically, this is anytime a pass rusher has a pressure, and it's usually strip sacks that are recovered by the defense, and anytime they have a pressure and the quarterback throws an interception. So I like giving credit to the pass rusher there because they're the ones that made the quarterback, you know, flushed and throw the bad play to a point. Obviously, as we were talking about earlier, depends on the quarterback style of play. But that's definitely one of my favorite things we've developed in the offseason. And then the things that are in development, there's some huge things on the horizon that I'm very specific excited about. I cannot go into the specifics is what I was going to just say right there. But the engineers are hard at work working on some models that should shed some light on QB decision-making and those decision-making tendencies. And this is going to be built off of our existing models, including completion probability, which I hope everyone knows by now because we mostly – that's our main thing on Sunday Night Football that we'll put out for the most part. And we've expanded that to measure, you know, the completion probability of any target on the field. If you remember from the Super Bowl, that Romo vision thing where, you know, he zoomed in on three different receivers and said this one had a this percentage of completion, this one had a this percentage of completion, and this one had this percentage completion, he chose that. So building off that, I'm really excited about what this is going to be. You know, it's still in development, so I can't really talk about it that much, but be on a lookout in a few months or so.
Pretty cool. Pretty cool stuff. So along those same lines, we are very early in the season, but what are some of the trends that that are just most exciting from the early goings? Like what is some of the stuff that you guys have picked up that that just seems new, fresh, cool, anything like that?
Yeah. So one thing that, I don't know, just week one in general, I saw a lot of just unique personnel packages that or like was used the most in a game since 2016. Like that's just been very cool and notable for me. So the Patriots used 20 personnel on 23 plays on Sunday night versus Steelers, which was the most in a game by any team since 2016. And the second most in a game by any team since 2016 was the Bears on Thursday night against the Packers, who used it on 21 plays. But the thing about the Bears one is Tariq Cohen only aligned in the backfield on like two of his like 48 snaps. So if that
he was like a wide receiver, basically.
He should be reclassified as a wide receiver, and that'll go down to 10 personnel, which is interesting because speaking of 10 personnel, Arizona, Cliff is coming out immediately in 10 personnel, which is super interesting. I know Josh Hermsmeyer, friend of your pod, has just wrote an article about that and looking at, you know, how many guys go out for routes and pass effectiveness, which is really interesting on 538. Suggest people go check that out. But they used 10 personnel on 56 of 82 plays last week, which is the most in a game, again, since 2016. So that's one thing that's been pretty fascinating, just overall looking at Cliff and how he's going to take over the league, or maybe not take over the league, but what he's going to do in the league is going to be very interesting going forward. I also think
I'm curious as to how many offenses start to see what they're doing really well and see what is working for the Arizona offense and starting to incorporate those elements, because that's just what happens. Anytime something works, other teams start to take it, and I wonder what other NFL coaches are going to say. Okay, Cliff is doing this and it's clearly working, and I just am sort of curious as to what elements kind of get taken from his offense.
Yeah, and one thing I really want to look into when I get the chance with the next gen data is seeing if his the air raid kind of wide splits of the offensive lineman has carried over to the NFL. I'm sure you can kind of get an idea of this from film, but it'd be interesting to see, like, you know, where he ranks you know, and how much of an outlier he is in terms of the NFL. And same thing with the like extremely max splits of his receivers when he's going four wide and two by two. And it looks like it's been Christian Kirk and Larry Fitzgerald in the slot, I believe. And it's been like Demaryius Byrd and Keyshawn Johnson outside. So
yeah, and it's gonna be Crabtree starting in week two. I think is Crabtree's gonna replace Demir Byrd, and so it's gonna be like a bunch. It's gonna be, you know, his boy, old Texas Tech all world wide receiver Michael Crabtree back in the mix. Love to see that.
Awesome to see. I mean, wasn't it Cliff that was throwing to Crabtree?
Oh man, I'm going to go look right now, because if that's true, I should have been like talking about this on podcasts in the past, but I mean, I know that he was one of Leach's quarterbacks. Okay. So 2008, the Texas Tech quarterback was Graham Harrell.
It was Graham Harrell.
So it was Cliff was there.
Cliff was 2003 or something.
Yeah, it was. So it was a little bit before that.
Okay. I was getting USC confused, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, Cliff was about to be OC there.
Right.
Another thing I want to look at I'm hoping to get it classified with Next Gen after, you know, all the big projects are done and they can kind of have some free time. But there's been a lot of talk about sim pressures / creepers this offseason. Steven Ruiz, who's a writer for USA Today, has done a lot of great work on it in the off season, but basically, if for the listeners that don't know what a sim pressure or a creeper is, it's basically it's when you have someone that's on the line of scrimmage, so like a defensive lineman that drops into coverage.
Yeah, it's so like it's a kind of like zone blitz. It's like play action, but for blitz
without blitzing. Yeah. So and then you have another guy come that's, you know, off ball linebacker, cornerback, slot corner, or safety or something that comes and, but you still have four or less pass rushers. So it's like trying to overload sides of the line. I know Mike Pettine has been using it a lot in Green Bay, and that makes sense because he comes from the Rex Ryan tree, and Rex Ryan was big in that. And the Packers defense in general is exciting to me. I think it's going to be a really solid group this year. They're using a lot of man defense with all that investment in the corners, and you know, Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith are two pretty underrated pass rushers that, you know, are hopefully gonna keep killing it like they did week one. I know that sim pressures and creepers were I think they're on two of Baker's three picks.
Yeah,
week one too. So I know the Titans have been using them pretty effectively, but hopefully we get those classified and can start, you know, looking at the tendencies of defenses and that, and break out things instead of just blitz and non-blitz into blitz, creeper, and, you know, just regular four-man pass rush, and kind of see the overall efficiencies of those. So that's something I'm definitely excited about, you know, hopefully looking into later in the season.
One of my favorite things, and you noted this in our agenda, is teams are going for it more on fourth down.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they are calling some horrible plays on fourth down, just some really, really bad fourth and one, fourth and short calls. Bravo, bravo to the coaches. Yeah, why don't teams just run the QB sneak?
It's the most effective play in football. It's like an 80% conversion rate on fourth and one. And of course, no one's run it more than Tom Brady because it's Belichick. But I just don't understand why teams don't line up and do that. I saw that. I think it was maybe the Texas LSU game this past weekend, but they were third and one and fourth and one from the four, and they lined up in shotgun both times and got stuffed. I'm like, just literally all you need to, like, you're making it so much harder for yourself. Line up under center and just try to push it forward twice, and you're probably going to win.
I would even say for teams with a quarterback that's not like, you know, it's not like a guy who can move a little bit, like Dallas or Buffalo or Carolina, they should have done this last night. I would even be okay with like quarterback power. Yeah, well, just quarterback power or zone read, one of the two. Yeah. Like either of those are fine for, I mean, zone read, we saw Deshaun Watson do it on fourth and one.
Exactly.
And the defense bit so hard because they were just expecting the off tackle run that he had 20 yards upfield to go and just go ahead and walk into the end zone, basically.
No, yeah. I zone read and short yardage is also a great play. And I think as Josh Hermsmeyer, again, has shown, pulling and any sort of pulling or gap scheme where you're, you know, having a specific point of attack yeah. is more efficient in short yardage than a zone run where, you know, the running back has to make a read. So I'd like to see more, because like zone runs outnumbered in his study, at least like gap runs, like 5-1 or something. I forget the exact numbers, but I'd like to see, you know, teams use more gap schemes on 4th-and-1. Cause like, it doesn't really matter. Like all that matters is the downside is already just not converting. So if they break through the line and, you know, the unblocked guy tackles your guy, like, I think that's going to happen less than just a zone play where the running back just doesn't make it to the, like, you really only matter, care about conversion rate there. So
right,
definitely would like to see more power in 4th-and-1.
And
so decision making is like the only thing that's keeping me watching Giants games this season, because I'm not long suffering. I've had a great life as a Giants fan. The past few years have been very rough, and Shurmur last year I know was like the second most aggressive coach on 4th-and-1, and he's continued that this season. So that's one of the saving graces right now.
It's gonna get worse before it gets better. It's gonna be I actually think if Eli keeps playing like this, we're gonna see Jones start a game by like week 8 or 9.
Yeah, I hope so. I was looking at the schedule. I'm like, all right, Eli needs to play week 6 against the Patriots and just let them be his last game ever and for the Giants. I think that's, you know, just the storybook ending that we need in the Eli Manning era of the New York Giants.
Yeah. So topic very near and dear to my heart, especially speaking of the Giants, who just got blown out by my favorite team, the Dallas Cowboys, last week. All off season, we heard, you know, Kellen Moore, he's got this new offensive system. He, you know, he's a coach's son. He played at Boise State, where they ran this like wildly creative hybrid spread air raid. Like this, the Boise State stuff in the mid 2000s was actually crazy, and I don't think people appreciated it at the time. So what are we seeing from the offense that is so different than what they've done the last 5 years with Scott Linehan?
So speaking of the Boise offense, I definitely recommend anyone check out my coworker. He's also a Cowboys fan who is just obsessed with Kellen Moore now. And has been saying it all off season. He wrote an article for Inside the Pylon looking at, you know, Kellen Moore's offense before the season and all the shifts in motion stuff. And so far, you know, that's just been, it's been 100% spot on. One thing, and this is from Action Stats, and there'll be a blurb about this in the photo essay that's coming out today. So definitely people check that out as well. But they've been using more 11 personnel. So in 2018, they used it about on a 63% of plays. In week 1, 73. So about, you know, 10 percentage point increase. And they were so efficient on it week 1, averaging 8.9 yards per play and 13.6 yards per pass, which is per play is a 3.4 yard increase from last year. And right now, with given their personnel, you know, that's just getting their best players on the field. You want Gallup, Cooper, and Cobb all on the field at the same time. It'd be interesting to see them run a little 20 personnel and get Pollard and Zeke on the field at the same time too. It's just, I don't think Witten still has that much. He was wide open on that touchdown, and Jarwin, same thing there. You know, another thing that he's doing more, again, just for analytical nerds to rejoice, is using more play action. So in 2018, per PFF, they ranked 13th with 25%. Week 1, they used it on 47% of dropbacks, which was second highest in the league. And that's also the second largest increase in the NFL year over year. And I think it'll stay. Because, you know, it seems like Kellen Moore knows what he's doing.
Dak already had the best game of his career. One game in to Kellen Moore's tenure, his first 400-yard game, and his I believe it was his first perfect passer rating game as well.
Yeah, and the Giants linebackers were just biting so hard on the play action. And yes, it was regardless of if Zeke or Tony Pollard were in the game. It was just that was really frustrating. Anyway, another thing that was real, it was fun to watch, to be honest, as much as I hate the Cowboys, was just they were using so much shift and motion. So in 2018, they used shift or motion on 44% of plays, which was 13th in the NFL. In week one, they used it on 69% of plays, which is fourth in the NFL, and that was the second largest increase in the NFL as well. So, and I know that helped Dak Prescott a lot to identify man coverage, and I think he was like 5 for 5 for 100-something yards and a touchdown versus man coverage versus the Giants. So, you know, the shifts in the motions, the play action, it's going to be a fun offense to watch, and, you know, they've always had the talent. I mean, one of the best offensive lines in the league. Dak's a very solid quarterback. Now they got Cooper, they got Zeke, they got Gallup, they got Cobb. I think they're going to keep rolling. And as much as it pains me to say, but yeah, definitely exciting things going on down there. It also seems like they're doing a lot more early down passing, which again, you know, just to analytics nerds everywhere, they're rejoicing.
Yeah, no, they're just doing like, it's like Twitter called all of the plays for Dallas week one. It's like honestly what it was like, just like play action regardless of who the running back was, throw it on first down, use jet motion or move someone around before the snap. Like it was just crazy.
Yeah, and I don't know if you follow Cowboys stats on Twitter, but he was just a sight to see during that first game, just because he was harping on that stuff all season, and when it actually came true, it was
really great. Speaking of Twitter calling plays, though, I think this is a really interesting thing to talk about. What makes Cliff Kingsbury's air raid Cliff Kingsbury's air raid? Like, I think everyone, like, a lot of people associate it with Mike Leach, those Texas Tech teams, and then a lot of really bad college football teams use the air raid as well. And then some of the really good Big 12 teams like Oklahoma use a lot of elements as well. And I saw a couple interesting threads on Twitter talking about Cliff actually doing some things that were not as effective as the Mike Leach air raid. So, you know, what makes Cliff's offense different from Mike Leach's, basically?
So I got a lot of these numbers from SIS, and huge shout out to Bryce Rossler at BT Rossler on Twitter, who just gathered a bunch of these really interesting stats for me. But we can look at kind of the routes that they ran and kind of identify from that which, you know, air raid staple plays Leach uses more compared to Cliff. So for Leach, it seems like they use a lot more mesh. He uses a lot more mesh than Cliff. So, like, for instance, if you look at slot wide receivers, the most frequent routes for Texas Tech were, you know, seams, which were 16% of routes last year, curls, which were 15% of routes last year, slants, which were 15% of routes last year, and outs, which were 9% of routes last year. And you compare that to slot receivers in the Washington State offense. The drag route was their most frequent at 11%. So that's mesh right there. And the out route was about 10%. So, and then deep cross and corners were 9% and 8%. So with the deep crosses, you're seeing more Y cross from the Washington State than Cliff used. And then with the seams, the curls, and the outs in Cliff's offense, him using those more, you're seeing a lot more stick plays and a lot more forwards. And that's also seen by their, you know, their outside wide receivers. It seems like Cliff has a more vertical game in general. For Texas Tech, they ran 35% of their outside wide receivers routes were nine routes, so like goes, flies, and fades last year, and that's compared to 20% for Washington State. So again, that's more of a four verts thing. And then the second most frequent route for Texas Tech outside wide receivers were curls. So I'm thinking that those are a lot of four verts being called plays, but those are converted based on the coverage. And then you look at Washington State's second most frequent route from wide aligned receivers was a dig, which was used on mesh, used in conjunction with mesh and Y cross a good amount. And then they had curls at 11%. And if you look at outside wide receivers for Arizona in week one, they ran nine routes on 25% of the plays.
So that's, they're the outside wide receivers in Cliff's system are like the clear out guys. They're like those guys are not going to be the intended targets on a lot of those plays unless they just like absolutely burn the corner that they beat. Like that's why like Kirk and Fitz on the inside are going to be like the really highly targeted guys.
Yeah. And another interesting thing was 15% of the outside wide receivers routes for Texas Tech last year were blocking actually. So that's how much more Cliff used the screen game than Leach.
That seems odd to me.
Yeah, I mean it's a very high amount, which is pretty interesting. But I think 39% of backfield targets for Texas Tech were screens last year. 14% of wide targets for Texas Tech were screened last year, and 18% of slot targets for Texas Tech last year. And they didn't really do that week one, which is interesting. So only 1 out of 25 Arizona slot targets were screens, only 1 out of 19 Arizona wide targets were screens. So that's around 5% each. And then 0 of the 5 backfield targets for Arizona were screens. So that's one part of his game that it seems like so far, at least, he has not brought to the NFL, but you know, maybe that's game script, and I'm excited to see how that develops with a larger sample size.
And I mean, he's got the personnel to do it right, to run those screens, because he's got David Johnson, who's probably the best screen pass. He's the best receiving running back in the NFL, I think.
Yeah, and what was really promising week one was, I think David Johnson had 43 air yards week one, and he had on 7 targets. He had 33 air yards on 76 targets in total last season.
So yeah, it's crazy.
I'm trying to get David Johnson in every league I can right now, because because he's on pace. I know in 2016 he had 580 air yards, and the next closest season the past 3 years was Tariq Cohen at 250 less air yards in a season, and those are just so valuable for fantasy and stuff, and just for your offense. Ben Baldwin's done a lot of great work on running back targets and their relative efficiency lately, but that's because the thing is, most running back targets are behind the line of scrimmage, and if you can target them downfield, especially on those halfback seam plays that were all the rave last year with the jet sweep motion, that's how Johnson scored in week one. Definitely love to see that for him, using him more as a dynamic receiver. I mentioned that when looking at the concepts, Cliff runs a lot more sticks, screens, and forwards compared to Leach's more mesh, Y cross, and Y corner. But it's funny, if you look at the air yards per target for Washington State and Texas Tech last year, Washington State was second to last in the FBS, and they had 5.9 air yards per attempt, and Texas Tech was still really low. They're 123rd. But they still averaged 1.6 air yards per target more than Washington State. So the degree of difference, even though it's only 7 spots out of 130, is huge. And this was a fun little nugget that Bryce pulled, looking at the top 3 air yards per target team are all triple option teams, just shot plays only. So Georgia Tech, 15.5 air yards per attempt last year, Navy 14.4 air yards per attempt last year, and Air Force 13.3 air yards per attempt last year.
Yeah. So something that listeners of this show know is that I think every air raid quarterback should be drafted and stashed by an NFL team. That means Luke Falk. That means Gardner Minshew. That means all the Oklahoma quarterbacks. I don't care. And I think these dudes with 1,200 reps at college are valuable NFL roster pieces. And we saw why on Sunday. Gardner Minshew came in for the injured Nick Foles, went 22-25 on a bunch of really easy, kind of simple concepts. And I think that, you know, when we see guys like Tom Savage or Brock Osweiler, or, you know, even if we went the other way, you know, guys like Joe Webb or Terrell Pryor, when those guys came in, or Josh Dobbs, even like these run first kind of style quarterbacks, I think the issue we see with them is they just are not able to keep it together for the rest of the game. Right. Like when is the last time we saw, you know, one of these quarterbacks come into the game who is not like not a top draft pick, like not a good quarterback come in and like actually be able to do anything repeatable. And so I thought the Jacksonville coaching staff,
maybe Dak.
Oh yeah. Dak. He like that is the last guy. That's the last guy I remember coming in like middle of a game and being good, just being fine. So yeah, that's what, 4 years ago at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, one thing that was really interesting looking at Gardner Minshew, you know, he completed his first like 12 passes or something, which I think was like an NFL record or something. And we're like mid game when we were working, like we were talking on our Slack channel, like thinking like, oh, maybe, cause like I remember last year when I think Phil Rivers broke the record with like 25 completions in a row, and like Nick Foles also had like a game like that. We wanted to take the completion probability of each single one of those plays and like multiply it together, like assuming independent events, to see what the are that he makes 25 straight completions. But the thing about Minshew, like when we were starting to look into that, like all of his passes like were so easy, like they all had like
crazy easy
60 plus completion probability. Like his lowest one was maybe like 40, I think. That's really shooting from the hip here, so don't take any of these numbers seriously, but and that showed in his xComp in week one. So he had 71.8% xComp in week one, so he was expected to complete 71.8% of his passes based on our completion probability model, which was the sixth highest of any quarterback in week one. And what this kind of, I mean, it's a different system and, you know, different quarterbacks, but it kind of reminds me of how Jacoby Brissett is playing this year so far. And one area that, you know, they both showed up when I was looking into this is they're attacking the seams a lot more. And, you know, it's not downfield the seams, but just the area between the numbers and the hashes, which has been shown by numerous people, but most notably maybe Sarah Malpai. Probably mangled her name, but she works for the Ravens now, but she is the one that came up with the scraping the next gen passing charts and then kind of creating heat maps to see like where throws are most likely to be completed. And if you look at, you know, that area down the field, like you get five more air yards and it's still the same completion percentage as inside the hashes and outside the numbers. Like that's definitely the most efficient area to target. And Frank Reich, since he's taken over as the Colts coach, has really emphasized that, which I like. So Minshew led the league with 68% of his attempts down the seams last week, and Brissett was right behind him at 67. And this was also seen with Andrew Luck last year, who had the second highest rate targeting the seams at 56. And just in general, looking at like the parallels between how Reich has made Brissett set him up to succeed more than Shadinsky did before.
Right.
Like, so they're dropping their time to throw. So Brissett had his time to throw at 2.89 seconds in 2017. And it was 2.33 seconds in week one. So that's a really dramatic difference. And Luck also had, like, over a full season, he was right with Brissett in 2016 at 2.88 time to throw. Seconds, and in 2018 he dropped that down to 2.63 seconds time to throw, which has also helped limit their pressure, along with obviously the massive improvements they've made to their offensive line, getting guys like Quentin Nelson, Braden Smith, etc. But Brissett and Luck had top five pressure rates in their last season as a Colts starter before Reich. And Brissett was only pressured on 4 of his 29 dropbacks in week one, which is 13.8%. And Luck almost cut his pressure rate in half last season at 21, 2.1%.
All right. So the last thing I want to talk to you about is this photo essay material that you did on NFL.com. You had your first written material on the big flagship website come out. You touched on four of the trends that we've kind of already danced around a little bit here on the show. So I wanted to close it off with you covering some of the interesting information that you uncovered for your first NFL.com article.
Yeah. So look out for the photo essay. It's going to be every week kind of taking our best research notes and, you know, putting it into more of an editorial spin. And it's going to be between the three next gen researchers. So myself, Joseph Ariola, and Matt Reinhart. And Reinhart is the guy that wrote the first one last week. So be sure to check that out as well. But basically, so we'll dive right into it. One of my favorite things, I mean, I love Lamar Jackson. I wrote a 5,000 word article for Football Outsiders about how you can't play man cover two against him like 2 years ago. And I've always been a big believer in him. And so I was ecstatic to see how he started off the season. And the really interesting thing is, you know, given his, you know, reputation for, you know, how electric his athleticism is. He's been so much better as a pocket passer in the NFL. So, especially week one, like 16 of his 17 attempts, he completed 16 of his 17 attempts inside the tackle box for 322 yards and all five of his touchdowns. And this is extended throughout his career. He's averaged nearly twice as many yards per attempt, 9.3. Then when throwing outside the tackle box, which is 4.7. And most like throws by quarterbacks, I think like the NFL average is probably around somewhere in the low 80s% are being thrown from the tackle box. And, you know, last year, he's been able to get rid of the ball much quicker when he's staying in there, which makes sense. You know, when you're rolling out to the tackle box, it's just extending the time. So I think that that's helped with his processing and everything. And his average time to throw is 2.51 seconds inside compared to 4.7 outside, which is a pretty dramatic difference. And he has 11-2 touchdown interception ratio inside compared to throwing zero touchdowns and one interception outside. And, you know, a lot of credit given to Greg Roman for adapting the scheme.
Yeah, perfect scheme it seems so far for him.
Yeah, and there was some really interesting stuff by former offensive line coach Paul Alexander on Twitter about how the Ravens specific, you know, run scheme and, you know, using Lamar as a threat kind of like just kept the Dolphins defense susceptible to deep passing and especially passes down the seams and everything. So, but last season, Lamar had the lowest percentage of his passes, 72%, inside the tackle box, and that's increased to 85% in week one. So the straight dropbacks, using play action a lot, as I think they were first in the league in play action, and not necessarily the rollouts, is where Lamar has really excelled so far. And excited to see, you know, him play a team that's not the Dolphins as well. And the Kyler Lamar matchup this week should be just a hell of a game.
Yeah, I'm so pumped for it. I hope that the spread is wrong and that it stays closer than two touchdowns. One of the things you touched on was really one of the things that I had no answer for in the offseason, which is what are the Patriots going to do without a tight end that they trust? Because Rob Gronkowski has been such a huge part of their offense for a decade. And then even outside of Gronkowski, they had so many veteran tight ends that they rotated in next to him. And now they have no one. Right now, for the first 4 weeks of the season, the Patriots have no tight end that they trust.
Yeah, and it seems like they still ran 21 personnel a good amount, but they also just eschewed the tight end position completely on a very high percentage of their plays. As I touched on earlier, they ran 20 personnel, so that's two running backs with zero tight ends on the field, on 23 offensive plays, which is the most by any team in a game since 2016. And I love putting this in perspective. They used that same personnel grouping on 18 plays combined in 2017 and 18. So leave it to Belichick to adapt the scheme to the strength of his players. Overall, they had two running backs in the field on 48 of their 67 plays, which I believe, again, ranks top five in the past six seasons. So they're, and it seems like they're doing it almost in duos, and it's like they're doing the same thing they did last year, but with the obvious like tells based on who's in the game. So James White and Rex Burkhead, I'm sure these overlapped a lot, but if they were on the field, like 28 of James White's 32 snaps were passes and 22 of Rex Burkhead's 30 passes were snaps, were passes. So that's like, all right, if they're in the, on the field, they probably get a pass. If Sony Michel, who's 17 of his 22 snaps were runs, and James Devlin, 21 of his 30 snaps were runs, are on the field, it's going to be a run, most likely. And one of my favorite things, this also ranked true last season, was Sony, like, so four of his five passing plays use play action. So it's just, Belichick's the best at self-scouting. Like, he's just operating on another level of everyone else. And he's using a running back by committee where he's using these tells to his advantage, which is crazy. Right. Like, one of the good things about having a guy like Le'Veon or Gurley or just a versatile back like David Johnson is you don't give off those tells, but if you can use those tells to your advantage, maybe that doesn't even matter. And this extended to last season. We kind of harped on this in the playoffs a lot. I think I spoke about this on the show, but Michelle and Devlin ranked first and second among 231 skill position players with 300 snaps in run rate when they're on the field, and James White on the opposite end ranked 220th. So it's great to see that continuing, and yeah.
So the last thing I want to pick on or touch on here before we get out of here, and of course, thank you so much for the time, is the Atlanta, Philadelphia, and the Falcons getting back, you know, one of the only defensive players that has really made a difference for them over the last few years, and Deion Jones.
Yeah, and, you know, Deion Jones missed 10 games in 2018, so we have a decent sample size on their plays with and without him. And, you know, with all these on and off splits, there's always the how much is actually affected by the player and how much is this affected by, you know, opponent adjustments, et cetera. But I think it's still interesting to look at. So since 2018, they've created pressure at a higher rate, so 31.5% with Jones on the field and 28.3% without. They've allowed 2.1 less yards per pass attempt. So that's 6.2 yards per pass attempt without and 8.3 without, 6.2 with Jones on the field, and have allowed like almost half the passing touchdowns per attempt. So 3.5% TD percentage with Jones on the field, 6.9% without. And he's not really an elite pass rusher. He's only generated three pressures on 81 pass rushes since 2018. But I think this, you can tie this together. His elite coverage ability has forced opposing quarterbacks to hold on to the ball longer. So yeah. 2.86 seconds time to throw with Jones and all the way down to 2.64 without. That's definitely interesting. Kind of helps explain the difference in pressure rate, and the sack rate difference is even more dramatic. So 8.2% sack rate with Jones on the field and 4.8% without him. So definitely getting Deion Jones back is a huge boost to the Falcons defense, and we'll see if it makes a difference in the Atlanta game and the Philadelphia matchup this week.
Yeah. Well, there we go. Keegan, thank you so much for the time. Tell people where they can find all of the stuff that you were working on with the NFL.
Yeah, so definitely a lot of the content we generate is put on our Twitter page. So Next Gen Stats at Next Gen Stats on Twitter. You can find me on Twitter at Keegan Abdu. And yeah, just be on the lookout during NFL broadcasts. And
yeah, a lot of good stuff coming out during the games.
Yeah, with just Next Gen Stats, check out the play diagrams, go to watch our live play diagrams and everything, and just mess around with it. And I hope to come out soon, just a scraper where you can get the week by week data without having to copy and paste it. So you can kind of build you know, stuff off of that, like a defense expected completion rate allowed and stuff without just copying and pasting a bunch. So be on the lookout for that. Yeah. And thanks for having me on, Davis.
There we go. Everyone, make sure to check out all the cool stuff going on over at NFL Next Gen Stats, and we will be back next week.